Righto, Money Miners, welcome back from me and Zach Day. First up, our thoughts and everyone's thoughts with the for the people at St. Ives. Tragic incident there early on in the week. Constant reminder to look after yourself and your workmates at all mine sites. Thinking of yous all, especially looking after the young fellas. So well, yeah, said, thinking of yous all there, and we know it'd be a horrible time. JD, bit more quarterly stuff out today, but let's make it easy for the Money Miners. Go to the director's special, links in the show notes, moneyofmine.com. Subscribe to the newsletter and all your quarterly info is in there. But not all the info, JD, just something. Just one thing that stands out, because we don't want it. You don't want to bore with all in sustaining costs and all that bloody yada yada. Just we hit the point.
The info that matters and a couple of our thoughts added throughout, mate.
Oh, so mate, well top said. Tweets, everything. And mate, refer it around. Use your referral link and you get 10 referrals and you get a slab of dingo. What a deal. What a deal.
Say no more.
Flying out the door. Righto, JD, big news for today. We've got a bit to go through. What have we got? We've got some interesting speculative trading on from one explorer to another explorer.
A bit of punting with the corporate account.
bit of punting. Hey, it's up a bit, actually. They've made money already. We'll go into that and a bit about
yeah, Linus. Yeah, Linus being a bit cheeky, hiding a few things out. We're going to touch on Metals X. They had a quarterly update. And Equinox, they were the ones who ended up outdoing Gold Road after Gold Road's shareholders – you know,
Gold Road took their big swing at it, really threw the kitchen sink.
That's it. Well, Equinox have now taken a massive swing and they are indebted to the hilt. So we'll go through what that means. And then I think there was one other bit of news that came out yesterday,
yeah,
Matty.
Pretty small one.
What was it again? Can you remind me?
Who's that big company? BHP.
Ah.
And they're going for that other big one, Anglo.
Anglo.
Yes. A bit of, it's a pretty decent potential M&A. Now, there's no bid, but there's like, it was just, we've gone and talked to you about this being the bid. So should we put one in?
So they approached them 9 days ago, and now the deal has been leaked. That always sets off alarm bells at Money and Mine. Somebody's leaked it for a reason, but we'll save that for later. But yeah, now they have, because there's these rules in the UK, they're called put up or shut up rules. So you got a month pretty much. BHP have a month to put in their firm intention to make an offer, and that can sort of be extended, but that's generally how it goes. So why don't we have a little squiz at the Anglo share price? This might give a bit of a flavour
And Anglo as a whole. Now that is going to be a big chunk. JD, what's the price action been?
Well, on the back of the news that the takeout is, you know, BHP are interested in a takeover, it's, as you'd imagine, very, very positive. The stock has shot up 20-odd percent. But if you look at and you zoom out, the past 2 years have been pretty horrid. Pre the news coming out, they were down almost 50-odd percent. And we'll get into the assets, but they've had problems across the portfolio, write-downs across the portfolio. We're talking about PGMs, nickel assets, diamond division through De Beers. Copper has seen production shortfalls and drops. So it's been rough. Matty, why don't we go through, for the Money Miners, all the various assets they have, because I think that's the perfect way to frame the discussion and understand why BHP are going to go or looking to go forward with a takeover.
Yes, let's do that, JD. Always good to learn about these big companies when you know bugger all about them, but much the wiser today, and the Money Miners are about to be too. So let's start with copper. That's one of the big chunks. So I've got a copper presence in Chile and Peru. So, Jesus Christ, I'm not looking forward to pronouncing all of these. The Los Bronces mine, 50.1% Anglo. So a lot of these are in JV with Codelco and Mitsubishi. Then they got that's a 33-year mine life. El Soldado, bloody 50.1% Anglo. Kuluasi. That's not too bad. That's up in the north of Chile. So Anglo's got 44% of that. 74-year mine life, that one. And the Chagres smelter as well. So, and then Peru, there's the Qualaveco. So 60% Anglo, 35-year mine life.
That's the, that's the new one.
Yeah, so, and look, you can see by this chart, kindly provided by JP Morgan, I think, main contributors are Kuluwasi and Qualaveco, both a bit above and below 200,000 tonne of copper each per year for the Anglo share. So, look, this copper exposure of Anglo Americas would increase BHP's output from by 0.6 million tonne to 1.9 million tonne per annum.
And so, to clarify with that chart, you're seeing Money Miners for the next 10-odd years, production between 500,000 and 600,000. That is entirely attributable to Anglo. That is their 100%.
Yeah. So, and the other big swing is the iron ore. And, well, so there's the Minas Rio in Brazil. So 24 million tonne per annum. So that's obviously that'll add to BHP's exposure they've got in JV with Vale in Brazil.
And then you've also got Kumba, which is a stake on a separately listed company in South Africa, of which Anglo owns roughly 63% of that company. So,
and we'll go into that later because they do not want that.
No, they don't.
No. So, and look, that brokers have put a value of US $8.5 to the Brazilian iron ore asset. So, and then they've also got, unfortunately at the moment, which we talked about the other week, 40% of GEMCO, the manganese, the good old Groot Island, 40. And so that's obviously up the shit at the moment. And they've also got 40% in Samanca in South Africa.
Yeah.
So now Metcoal, that's there's a bit of a good swing here. So you remember BHP obviously sold the Blackwater and Daunia assets to Whitehaven, but we surmised they weren't the top quality assets. Hence, that's why they bloody sold them. But Anglo do they've got the Moranbah North and Grosvenor. They're sort of the flagship operations in the Bowen Basin in Queensland. Anglo own 88% of both of them. Remaining 12% in a consortium of Japanese steel companies. And they've also got the Capcoal and Dawson's operation, 70% and 51% respectively. Dawson, I think that was originally operated by BHP Mitsui, the BMA Alliance in 99. Peabody actually bought 55% from BHP. Then Rio's Coal and Allied then bought Peabody's coal ops, and now and Mitsui actually invoked their preemptive right and bought the whole operation themselves and then sold the 51% to Anglo, and then now BHP might get it back. It's like a Newcrest Newmont bloody setup. So Anglo, they're guiding 16 million tonne of met coal for FY24, and in comparison to what BHP have right now, BHP just downgraded their met coal guidance to 22 million tonne for their 50% share of the BMA Alliance. So it's about an extra 40% addition to their met coal output as well. And we all know how good profitable met coal is at the moment.
And in terms of quantum, that is a bit over what they just sold, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So now the diamonds, did not know till today that Anglo American owns 85% of De Beers.
Yep.
You obviously knew that. Oh, I didn't. You're just...
Yeah, I mean, Anglo have a long, long history in South Africa, fascinating history. And the De Beers stake came... There's a long intertwining there, but I think about 10 years ago is when they got involved there.
Yeah. And look, in the fertilizer division, probably not much of a bloody... much interest to them. They've got the wood... Anglo's got the Woodsmith project in England, so it's an underground potash mine, acquired in a $405 million buyout of Sirius Minerals.
Yes.
So I think it's been pretty costly and taken a long time, AJD, one.
They had a write-down of $1.7 billion on the asset last year. And, I mean, it's kind of interesting to put it side by side. We know BHP likes potash. I'm less sure that they'll like this asset.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So first production for this Woodsmith project is actually supposed to be in 2027 and lines up with the anticipated ramp up of BHP's Jansen project in Canada. So probably nothing there, but that's just a coincidence maybe. Nickel, they've got Anglo's got the Barro Alto in Brazil. That's another write-down, eh?
Yep, that had a US $800 million write-down very recently. And then, of course, you've got the PGM business. This is through their 79% ownership in Amplats, also a separately listed company.
And now, just don't get that confused because I did. It's Amplats with an A, not Implats and Zimplats. So Implats owns Zimplats. This is Amplats, totally different. So, but so it's still PGMs in South Africa.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when you look at all those assets, and what BHB really wants is about 2/3 of, you know, the earnings of those assets. And what I mean by that is they don't want the PGM business and they don't want Kumba Iron Ore, as we sort of said, which we'll get into more in a moment.
Mm. So pro forma, what will this look like? And we'll just do this on an EBITDA, I guess, pie chart, you'd say. It's a bit different depending on which analysts or research you look at. But the pro forma, if this were to happen, BHP would be 45% iron ore, 40% copper, 12% coal, 2% diamonds. So I think it's pretty similar to what it is today. I think the copper percentage would lift up a bit on those numbers, but it shows how levered BHP are to copper, or potentially going to be levered to copper. They're not just an iron ore business. They're very, very going balls deep on copper here. So
yeah, and that is, to be clear, for next year, for 2025, that's a rough forecast of EBITDA earnings. Obviously, what your forecast copper price is, what your forecast iron ore price is, has a bit to do with what the outcome will be there.
Mm, so I guess you talked about, I think, and the big thing was the condition of like what they want. The condition that BHP put to Anglo was that they would have to like divest or spin out the South African assets.
Yeah.
So the Kumba and Amplats, because BHP don't want to be in South Africa. And I think, look, the JP Morgan note also indicated that post-deal they'd probably look to divest the manganese, the nickel, the diamond assets of Anglo's. Manganese, look, they divested that in the South 32, or spun out in the South 32. Nickel, probably not big on their radar with the way Nickel West is going. And then diamonds in the De Beers thing, diamonds are a very what's the word for it, JD? It's not a BHP sort of thing. I know Rio had the Argyle thing, but that was in Australia, pink diamonds, and there's that.
It's complex, right? It's really complex.
Yeah, there's a big social aspect to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not your bog standard logistics type operation, although it is a reasonably valuable asset. So I think we should make a quick comment on how the companies have been trading, because this is pretty important, Maddie, given how the deal is structured, which we'll get into afterwards. So BHB on the news traded down 4%, gives you a bit of a feel for how their shareholders are reacting to
the proposed deal. All the other blue chips were going pretty good too. Like they're all flat. So BHB was a bit of an outlier on the mining blue chips.
Yeah.
So,
and in terms of how they've been trading over the past few years, they're in that sort of $40, $45 range, which they've been for a number of years now, given they have been paying pretty decent dividends over the past few years. They're last capped in Aussie dollars at $220 billion. So you can sort of keep that in mind. And then you look at Anglo. Like we said, they have had a horrid past couple of years, down about 50%. Obviously, like I said, the news today has helped them tick up a bit. So they last traded at a market cap of about 34 billion pounds or $65 billion. But given the divestiture, that is not what BHB will be paying. So, you know, write-downs across all these sorts of assets is what has caused them to have a torrid time and maybe leading to a few punters out there saying BHB is being a bit opportunistic. I know we've definitely heard that sort of commentary from big Anglo shareholders saying they're trying to pick these assets up on the cheap.
Mm.
So yeah, the deal structure.
You look at the chart, that's pretty much exactly what it looks like is happening.
Mm.
Yeah.
So the proposed deal, which hasn't officially been put forward yet.
Very specific, but.
Yeah. 0.7097 BHB shares per Anglo share. So that values Anglo in its entirety at 31 billion pounds. And, you know, given where you see the market cap trading, like we just said, Maddie, it indicates the market's perhaps anticipating that there's going to be either a competing bid or a bump in BHB's price. So After Anglo divest the stake, it's, you know, it's pretty complicated what BHP want them to do. They want them to sell to the shareholders pro rata, distribute the stakes in Kumba Iron Ore, that's 63% ownership, and that 78% ownership of Amplats. You're really talking about a business that has a £21 billion value, or $25.5 billion,
yep,
or $39 billion Aussie dollar, you know, on today's exchange rate sort of value. And that, compared to BHP, is 17% of its current market cap.
Mm.
And BHP, in the document that they put out today in their announcement, say their bid is a 31% premium on the unlisted assets. And interestingly, they say it's a 19% premium to the median broker net asset value of Anglo. And I want to expand on that in a second, because that is a super, super interesting point in my opinion.
Fun fact about that you gave me this morning about BHP's market cap, JD, that is what Facebook went down overnight. Meta.
Fucking huge, huge.
After
big tech.
Saying they're putting all the money into AI.
Yeah, so they operate a bit different over there.
Yeah, anyway. Mate, JD, so I think we can establish why BHP is possibly looking at this deal. Pretty much for bloody, I suppose the iron ore is pretty big in Brazil, but really honing in on that copper exposure.
Yeah, I'd say copper, and then to a slightly lesser degree, met coal and iron ore.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, you know, roughly 550,000 tonnes per annum of copper production. That take them over 10% of global copper supply. That is,
and it'll actually take them to the biggest copper producer ahead of Codelco after this one.
By a big margin. Yeah. It'd be pretty huge. And like we sort of say, looking at Anglo's earnings, ex Kumba and Amplats, about half of it is coming from copper. So that's, you know, that's what BHP are really targeting. And it's not that their copper assets have been without problems. You touched on the South American assets there, Matty. Just last year, Anglo came out and said they're having issues and cost issues at these mines, and output is going to be cut by 200,000 tonnes for the year. That is a huge amount. It's enormous. Lot.
That's 3-4 CSAs.
Yeah. Yeah. Over four. It's massive.
Four and a bit, yeah.
Yeah. So it gives you an indication of the scale of the operations at Anglo, and it also gives you an indication that things haven't always been humming there. And then you've got Minas Rio, the Brazilian iron ore mine. And this is really interesting. One way I sort of thought about this is kind of like BHP's response to Rio going to Simandou. What they're going to get, you know, 24 million tonnes per annum is relatively similar to what Rio is going to get in Simandou. I think their attributable stake of the whole thing is 26 million tonnes per annum. They're spending a lot on CapEx, Rio that is. And, you know, if you cut the slice of how Anglo is valued, you could make the argument that BHP is paying less for this stake in a fairly similar sized operation than Rio is going to sink in the ground in Guinea. So, yeah, I mean, that's one way to kind of look at that. And then you've got the Queensland met coal assets. And I think they'd go well together with BHP's current suite of assets in the Bowen Basin in Queensland. We know BHP had been very, very vocal in their dissatisfaction with the Queensland government and the royalties, and they said they're not going to sink a single dollar more in greenfields. They would in brownfields and expansions and whatnot. But they were, you know, really, really pissed off with the royalties that got sprung on them by the state government there. So they're going a bit against that, but I think it sort of speaks to the asset quality that they're buying out of Anglo if they do end up buying it. And then, like we said, Matty, the rest of the assets, that's just a banker's dream. They're gonna get spun out. Potash, we know BHP likes potash, but I'm not so sure about Woodsmith. GEMCO, that 40% stake's gonna go. I think you can say the same about Samancor. Diamonds, they already said in the announcement that is going to go straight under a strategic review. I would be of the opinion that they're going to get rid of that as well, Matty. And then you got nickel asset in Brazil that just had a big write down. I would think that is on the chopping block as well.
So what about the big dogs involved, JD? Big Mike Henry, what's his incentives to get this rolling?
I think it's a great question, Matty, because these execs at these big companies, you know, their reputation and their legacy is often viewed of as how they executed on the big deals that they did in their time. And they always want a big deal that they can point to and hopefully say that it went successfully. And that is how their whatever 5 or 10 year tenure is viewed of in a nutshell. So this will define Mike Henry's career at BHB if it goes ahead. And I think it's sort of fair to say that he's done a pretty good job since he came in. There's been a whole bunch of pretty decent things that he's done. He cleaned up the London listing and all of that. You know, Ben Cleary came on hoping that Glencore would do something similar. I think that was viewed of as pretty positive by the market. Bought Oz Minerals. I think in time that'll turn out to be quite a good acquisition. He's also simplified the portfolio, obviously selling Blackwater and Daunia, selling the oil and gas assets. Now, I know a lot of people would sort of view that as him and BHB bowing to the ESG pressures that institutional investors put toward them, but they did maintain ownership of the better met coal assets in the Bowen Basin, like we just said, and also being a pure play miner as opposed to having oil and gas assets as well as hard rock mining assets makes a bit more sense to me and I think to investors, big institutions as well.
I think the goalposts have changed on the Insto's feelings towards met coal and things as they were a couple of 2 or 3 years ago, most definitely.
I think you're right there. And then he also hasn't had any disasters, Matty, which is, you know, given the huge portfolio of assets is, you know, nothing to sort of sniff at, like both in the sense of disastrous M&A that hasn't happened yet. That often takes a while to play out though. But socially, and just look at his former counterpart at Rio, Jean-Sebastian Jax, the disaster that the Juukan Gorge incident was for Rio Tinto. And nothing like that has happened at BHB under Mike Henry's watch. And, you know, hopefully nothing does happen like that. But it is definitely something to view at. And it's a part of the remuneration as a CEO of a large mining company is, you know, avoiding these significant incidents. So, I think it sort of putting all that together shows you a pretty good track record. But this would no doubt stand head and shoulders above anything else that's been done so far. So he needs to get it right. And like we've said, you know, quite a few times now, it's just a big bet on copper and to a slightly lesser degree on iron ore and on met coal. And in terms of incentives, we always look, I think it's a bit of a, you know, a lesser issue with a company like this with the amount of scrutiny that they have on their remuneration and whatnot. But significant events, climate change, indigenous partnerships, these all play a role in how these guys get marked and how they get paid. And if you're buying a company that's got a stake in De Beers, it owns met coal mines, it operates in South Africa, like that's not going to make any of those marks any easier. So it makes you think that he is looking at the asset value quite clearly and thinks there's value to be had in the assets, at least at the proposed sort of price. And, you know, you'll have to keep a close eye on that, Matty, if it does come to the point in time where they throw in a kicker or they, you know, make cash a portion of it, improve the bid. Then it would get pretty interesting. They talk about how disciplined they are on price in the announcement. And I remember with the Oz deal a couple of years ago, they just said, we're disciplined on price, we're disciplined on price. And then they came back a few months later and they just upped the bid anyway. So
to a very round number. No, it was a round number to start with. Yeah, and then it went to 28, 24.
Something like that. Yeah. Plus a divvy to Oz shareholders. So we'll see. I think obviously, what they pay is going to matter a huge deal. And given the market is indicating that they think there's a bit of a kicker on the way, we'll see how disciplined they can be in price.
And what and how much they sell a lot of this shit for too, because that's going to – you can get whatever price you want. It's then what you get for the assets as well can make a big bloody difference. You're talking – it'd be easy to have a variance of $1 billion per asset.
Yeah.
For those sales. So, yeah. What about on the Anglo side, the Anglo boss, Duncan Wenblad?
Yeah. So he's only been in the job a few years following Mark Cutifani, and he has had a very tough run. It's pretty much coincided with that downward trend in the stock. And that is
Cutifani see the writing on the wall, did he? Got out it right at the top.
That might be one way to look at it. But, you know, that's not how you want to get remembered in your job, is it? Especially not as an exec at a big company. This is Duncan we're talking about here. So, at the very least, he will want to extract a lot of value and, you know, I think at a minimum that means convincing BHB that they need to up the offer a little bit and then he can go along with the board and say, you know, we extracted as much value as possible if they do ultimately end up selling the company. We saw the same at Oz. We saw the same at Newcrest not too long ago. And even better if they can entice a rival bidder to come in and have a bit of competitive tension in the bidding process, Matty.
So what Do you think it's a good deal at the moment, even though it's not a deal or anything? What do you think?
I think the way we have to look about this, Matty, is through the lens of how the company script is trading to start with, because it's an all script deal that's being proposed. So obviously you want your paper to be relatively highly valued and you want the target to be cheaply valued, both versus you and, you know, relatively thinking about the assets you're acquiring, you want them to be trading cheaper to what you think the value of them is. And then also obviously in mining, you want synergies generally. And BHP have pointed to synergies, but that doesn't seem to be super apparent to me in this instance. Obviously you've got your standard corporate synergies, but the only real place or the only real geography where you see synergies here is the Queensland Met Coal assets. And we've seen some analysts say around about $750 million in annual savings. That seems a bit of a stretch to me. There's other analysts that have said a far, far lower number than that. And I'm much more in the suspect camp, given it's just that one geography that you can reap a lot of the synergies from. So, I mean, some people have said you get better pricing power, better buying power, just buying through bulk. But, I mean, if BHP doesn't already have that, then you'd question who does. So yeah. This is much more a deal hinging, Matty, on getting good assets at a cheap price rather than an enormous amount of synergies that you're going to reap from combining your assets with their assets.
Well, you think if they're so bullish on copper, where do you get the most leverage to the copper price? It's getting more assets in Chile and Peru, and that's what they are getting here.
So. Yeah, and I mean, it brings us to the point on net asset value, Matty, and BHP state in their announcement, they're advertising that they're paying 19% above the broker median net asset value, and that's just fascinating. Why would you say this?
So they're effectively saying that we are, our decks are way above what the broker's consensus is on like copper price.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you're explicitly saying that you think the street is undercooking the commodity price forecast. I mean, we're talking about net asset value here, and you'd never pay 20% above what you think the net asset value is of the assets. So,
and brokers are usually they're usually a bit higher.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think mining companies have the best insight, and you know you do see these sell side decks revised all the time, but they're saying the sell side has it wrong. And when it comes down to it, mining is relatively simple, Matty. It's just P times Q, price times quantity, yep. And you take away the cost. And you wouldn't think the quantity, the output from the operations is going to move massively. Perhaps BHP can run the assets a bit better and that the costs are slightly smaller. But the pricing and the dollars you're receiving for the commodities is the big thing that hinges on. And the long-term copper consensus sort of sits around $4.50 a pound. And BHP is just saying that's low at the end of the day. And the sort of contrarian inside of me is a little bit alarmed by this because there's barely a corporate out there that isn't super bullish on copper. We've seen it from gold companies, from diversified miners. Everyone is bullish on copper. And I like it. I understand the reasoning. I'm probably in the same boat as well. But just when you see everyone running toward one thing, you know, it does set off a couple alarm bells and make you kind of, or at least make me want to turn the other way. I think the obvious counter to this would be that the mining sector is relatively small and it's been so ignored and, you know, it could just be that this bullishness around copper is loud in the circles and the people that we speak with, Matty, but outside of it, it's still relatively underfollowed. Kind of like in our chat with Brian the other day, him saying that, you know, nobody cares about mining, essentially. That is what he was saying at the end of the day, and people were just following big tech and all these sorts of things. So just to round off on the comment on net asset value, I think you could make the same argument about Met Coal, and I think that's why BHP have kept their good assets there, and they'd be happy to buy some more. And, you know, it'll be buried in BHP's announcements for years to come, but they will make, you know, good money off these really profitable assets.
Yeah. So I suppose in terms of whether a deal would go through and at this price, I think we could say, I'd nearly put my cock on the block and say it definitely will not go through at this price.
All right. Yeah. You're quite confident. I'd probably side with you there. Yeah. I mean, to start with, it hasn't been officially proposed yet. And like we said, they've got these rules in England, but I'm confident a deal will emerge or a proposal will emerge. You know, one way or another, this is going to take a long time. The amount of...
Minimum a year, even if this was the deal to go through.
100%. The regulatory approval across the globe. We've already seen the South African Minerals Resource Minister say he opposes the bid at a personal level. He didn't say he was speaking for the country there, but he said the country's experience with BHP has not been positive. So that might give you a little flavour for how some governments might view it. And of course, you've got the divestitures as well. That adds to it all. Plus, like you say, Maddie, what the market's telling you, and they're telling you that it's not happening at this price.
Yeah.
They're anticipating, you know, at a minimum, BHP is going to up it or rejig it with cash or something like that. And then you've got the other big question, mate. Are we going to see an interloper? Are we going to see a Rio, a Glencore, a Vale come in?
I'll tell you who thinks there's going to be an interloper.
Tell me.
JP Morgan. They're bloody shitbagging the deal in their note, which, and because they're not on the deal with anyone. So they want to obviously think, well, we need to bloody say it's definitely not going through. And they're saying there's more likely going to be an interloper because they want to get on the interloper's side.
Yep.
So you can see that bloody transpiring.
Everyone just wants to clip a ticket, hey?
Yeah. So who, I guess...
Glencore, they come to mind, right?
Yeah. I actually saw a recent tweet from the great at Trav Money of Mine, who is not enjoying his holiday at all because he's just on Twitter the whole time.
Give him a follow.
Give him a follow while you're at it. Get him to 10,000. He loves it. Me and JD just could not be bothered. But he actually found comments from the Anglo CEO just 2 months ago in the context of Glencore.
Let's play it.
Play it for you.
Talked a little bit about the one adjacency, the one that you've announced today. We had dinner last night with Glencore. That's another adjacency.
It is.
What are the thoughts there? Why are you and Glencore and Teck not talking more about that? It seems like there's a lot of value on offer there.
There is, Jason. I think the logic of that is very similar to that of Serpentina, right? So one of those very rare opportunities where you get to either share a resource or share infrastructure, and the construct there is that there's a lot of infrastructure now in terms of water and plant. There's some fantastic high-grade ore body at Collahuasi. So, you know, the industrial logic on the face of it seems to be pretty obvious in terms of, you know, how we could extract value out of that. We are talking, right? But it is, as with all of these sorts of things, it's a negotiation, and every party needs to win in a negotiation like that. But I assure you that there are discussions that are going on between the three partners and the other partners, because there are a number of partners on that particular joint venture, to see if we can extract value outside of a potential expansion.
Talked a little bit about that.
Well, there you go. The old smoke and mirrors, hey? But
I think Glencore is still chewing on the Teck coal assets that they've bought for what it's worth, and this would just be such a bigger deal for them than it is proportionally for BHP. But that leaves us with
Rio. Get Glencore into the South American South American copper industry, but which I'm sure they'd love exposure to, and enhancing the bloody adding of the met coal assets they've got out of the Teck and everything they've got already. So
yeah, we know they're fans of met coal.
Yeah, but
to touch on Rio, Maddie, you know, it would be wild and it'd be so cool for the potty if Rio came in with a bid. That would just be awesome. But they've got a pretty dusty track record when it comes to M&A in the big end of town. And maybe potentially that puts them off. We know they've sort of been walking on eggshells socially. They've had a disastrous few years. And going into these commodities and into these jurisdictions, that doesn't make it any easier. The safety track records at some operations in South Africa are just atrocious. And yeah, that would be tough for a company like Rio, given sort of where they are to stomach at the moment. So that kind of leaves Vale and Anglo's former CEO, who we mentioned before, Mark Cutifani. He's the chair of Vale's base metals unit. They're backed by the Saudis. So yeah, we know there's pretty substantial firepower in terms of capital behind them. So I'd put them down as a bit of a dark horse in this one. They could potentially come through with a deal of sorts. And then you've got the pick of the rest of them. And this would more be a merger, I'd say, given the size of these companies. But South 32, Freeport are way bigger than South 32. Teck, you know, they've trimmed down, seeing as they've cut their business in half, or even a Chinese group potentially. Mm. Who knows? So
if you're looking at those, like your South 32s and Freeports and that'd be little bits here and there, you would imagine, would it?
I mean, it could be a similar type of structure to what BHP are proposing, although if you want to outdo them, you'd want to do something that's perhaps more simplistic. So hard to say, but a big round merger, maybe.
I'd reckon. What's your prediction, JD?
My prediction is, it's a good question, that BHP comes back with an improved bid and sees the deal through.
Yeah, I'm going to predict the same. I'm going to predict a very similar path, even though this one's scrip and Oz Minerals was cash. But I would anticipate a very similar journey that they went on with the Oz Minerals one. It'll they'll knock it back. They'll bloody hang around for a few months, then they'll up the bid and it'll go through. Maybe. Who knows? But look, if BHP get it or whoever get over the line on this takeover bid, they'll be locking in WA water bores straight away, I reckon, JD.
No brainer.
Mate, they've got to future-proof these big operations, in especially in South America. Lock in the water.
Yeah.
You want to keep those mills spinning.
Yeah, and you want the best people in the industry to do it for you.
And that is James at WA Water Bores, because they're going big, mate. On the back of our bloody potty yarns about them, they started out drilling through the absolute pus of the Goldfields paleo channels. That's their bread and butter for WA Water Bores. But I reckon they'll be drilling for water in Chile and Peru soon, spearheading this water supply for copper mining. And, mate, get in quick, money miners that are listening, because for anything water-related, anything mud rotary drilling, before they go international, they're going to be too bloody busy for you. So I would get in now.
100%, Matty. And we know how important water is, especially, you know, in the Andes there.
Oh.
Water's like, you know, you mentioned that side by side with the copper there.
Yeah. So, yeah. And look, if you got them now, and then you see them drilling in the Andes later on, it'll be like a little badge of honour. Yeah, I reckon.
I can see it in the BHP presentations already.
Yeah. Give James a buzz. Details in the show notes with his email.
WA Water Bores.
JD. Now, big fella.
No, we've got an interesting one to talk about now. We're going to the complete other end of the spectrum. Chalice popping up on the register at Encounter.
Yeah, so Chalice of diversifying away from PGMs and going into sort of a bit like a listed investment company, maybe, doing a bit of trading.
It's a head scratcher.
This is fucking random. So Chalice have tipped in $7.6 million to gain a 6% shareholding in, you'd say, WA1's stepbrother, Encounter Resources. So their average weighted buying price is 28 cents. So they're already up $2.6, JD. So go Chalice. So you can see by the buying here, they've tipped in $1.5 in the recent $10.5 million cap raise that Encounter did. And then they've, block traded $6.1 million a bit of time after. And what do you know? That 20.5 million shares matches exactly the holding of Silver Lake Resources.
That is detective work that no other media organisation will get you.
Didn't see that on any other news articles.
Well done, Matty.
Isn't that funny? So yep. They've obviously block traded Silver Lake's legacy holding there. IGO still sitting on the register there with $10 worth of stock, praying for a miracle. They got that Patterson's Copper Farm in JV. So anyway, geez, look, I'll bring up the old Encounter. Geez, look at the kink in the southern tenement boundary, JD. Wouldn't that piss you off? So close to having the WA1 loony deposit. Anyway, exploration play. We know from our chats that a niobium-rich carbonatite like WA1's is extremely bloody hard to find, near impossible to find a repeat of, but they're trying. They might have better luck finding the IOCG deposit out in the east, and that's what they're originally for.
It is.
Anyway, one of the big reasons they haven't found anything out at West Arunta is because they haven't used any time exploration for anything. I know this for a fact.
They're not helping themselves,
are they? No, mate. Geochem and Geophys, that drilling and the drilling, that can only get you so far, JD. Sometimes you need a bit of alpha, and that alpha comes in the form of Seamus Murphy and any time exploration. So, mate, Seamus even helps companies not get fined.
Does he?
Yeah. What a bloke. Mate, tenement holders under the, now here's a bit of bloody legal info for you, under the Mining Act, they're required to provide the Mining Rehabilitation Fund assessment information, the MRF, also known as like disturbance data. Got to provide that by 30th of June each year. Failure to do so will result in an infringement notice being issued to you, the company. Don't waste shareholder money on fines. Anytime exploration, sort the MRF assessment information out for you.
Just have Seamus come in, take the weight off your shoulders.
Yeah. Don't even bother Googling what this MRF assessment information is. Just ring Seamus and the Anytime team and say, Seamus, can you sort that bloody MRF thing out for me? And Seamus will say, yep, and he'll hang up the phone.
It's a 30-second call.
It's all you need. Seamus's emails is in the show notes. Get AES to sort your MRF by 30 June. Simple as that.
Thank you, Anytime.
Thank you, Chalice, for buying that stock.
Maddie, we've got another good one to talk about. I want to talk about Linus.
Yeah, so they had the quarterly the other day, JD. It was on our the day we had the
Brian Lax interview, which is go and watch. That's a cracker. Oh,
Brian, that was good. Right in our wheelhouse. Cheers, Brian. Mate, what's going on? Linus cost blowout.
Cost blowout, yep, at Kalgoorlie. So they're trying to trick us again. And this is definitely one that you want to read back to front. So they started the quarter with cash of $686 million. They closed the quarter with cash of $616
million.
So down $70 million. And that is pretty reflective of where the rare earths market is. You know, you can't really blame them for that. It's at a low point.
Coming back a bit. It was down like in the 43s. I think it's back up to 47 now for NdPr per kilo.
Yeah.
So it's coming back.
Yeah, and they've also had CapEx spend, you know, around the grounds. So the operations saw net positive cash flow of $11 million, but $98 million went out the door. You know, this is sort of a summation of how they report it, Maddie. $98 million went out the door for CapEx, exploration and development, and it's unclear what portion of that CapEx is sustaining slash growth, so that operating cash flow of $11 million could be lower. Mm. Then you've got Kalgoorlie. So the commissioning activities remain ongoing. Obviously, the new plant that they're building that's more or less complete now. Now, they've said the flow sheet needs additional testing in amongst several other areas that need a bit of work there too, and that has led them to say that there's been an increase in the total CapEx now at $800 million. And I sort of put that in quotation marks because back in August, they reported a cost blowout here. And what they said was that is $730 million total now. And that was sort of deemed the updated project budget plus $50 million in pre-commissioning and commissioning costs. So essentially what we said at the time was that's $780 million.
Yeah,
you need to spend both of them, obviously. Now in the March quarterly, which came out the other day, they made no mention of this extra $50 million, but they say the updated project budget is $800 million, which makes me pretty confident in thinking that the total is really $850 million and they're conveniently not mentioning that extra $50 million. Now, it's not a crazy amount of money for a company of Linus's size, but I think it just goes to show how they operate and they're not being fully transparent in their reporting, and it makes me pretty untrustworthy of how they're going to report going forward and how I read their, you know, their statements in future.
Maybe Miss Gina Reinhardt, if you're listening as a shareholder now, you should be hitting up Amanda about that possible lack of detail, because as a shareholder, it is in your best interests.
Absolutely.
Gina Reinhardt. JD, bloody everyone's loving, and this is the reason the big old West himself come on, because we talk about 10 now.
10.
How good's 10? Metals X, the quarterly came out.
It wasn't the best quarter, mate. No. So they produced 2,270 tonnes of tin in concentrate. Now, this was down quite a bit, down 17% quarter on quarter, and that was the result of lower grades being mined and milled. They did have high throughput, which did a little bit to alleviate that, but that all-in cost was up 21% to $34,000 a tonne. Now, MLX blamed a few other factors as well. They said the higher grade stockpiles were unavailable, a delay in sequencing and production from essentially the better ore bodies, and you know, we just need to look next quarter, keep this all in mind and see if these are just temporary blips and hopefully they get back down to those lower operating levels, lower cost operating levels.
It's an interesting one when they say that, like a delay in sequencing. You can either say, right, what's If that is true, that means right. That means a bit of sugar's coming, but will they get there this quarter? So
yeah,
it can go either way with things like that. So.
And with the way the tin price has been going, you'd really want to straighten that out. I mean,
yeah. So your all in cost, that was 34,000 Aussie, but I think the US tin price is what, about 32?
Yes, that's right.
So
yeah.
Chuck a bit of bloody. So still bloody making money.
Yeah. So net cash flow on your point there, Maddie, for the operation was 13.8 million. 50% of this is attributable to Metals X, and you know,
What is it? Yunnan Tin, is that the other 50%?
That is the
owner?
Yeah, the partner, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, on a more exciting front, they finally announced this this capital allocation framework, or whatever their specific wording for it was. Essentially, they're buying 10% of their stock back, which is very exciting, given that there was finally some guidance into what they're going to actually do with the enormous pile of cash that they've got. So they started making a bit of headway on that. They bought 1.05 million shares back over the quarter. It's just a measly $375,000, a drop in the ocean for their $167 million of closing cash.
Should have bought it back before the tin price went up, Jada.
They should have, mate. We told them, but better late than never, hey?
Oh, Jada, you can't do everything for everyone. Mate, the infamous the Greenstone Gold Project, Equinox, who was the owner and operator of that, 60%, aren't they?
60%. Yeah. They bought the other 40.
They bought the other 40 after Gold Road was sniffing around. I don't know how hard they tried. But
yeah, how did we chat about it, Matty? I think we said they meekly announced that they're walking away and that they've heard their shareholders and they're listening to their shareholders. I thought it was a pretty weak announcement at the time from Gold Road. But on the flip side of that, you've got Equinox now becoming the 100% owner of Greenstone. Now, they've paid $995 million for that 40% stake. So
US?
US.
Yep, yep.
That is Jesus. 42 million in shares that they're going to issue to Orion. And, you know, they're valued at $250 million plus $705 million on closing, which is, you know, imminent, and another $40 million on December 31st of this year. So to fund this, Equinox have a new $500 million 3-year term loan, no principal to be repaid in the first 2 years, and they raised $260 million in new equity. So this thing's pretty big. It's meant to churn out 400,000 ounces per annum for the first 5 years, a 14-year mine life as it stands now. But they have a very chunky amount of debt now, so things have got to go smoothly. You know, it's a debt of over $1 billion US dollars. They're capped at US 1.7 billion.
Jeez.
The all-in sustaining cost, mate, was US just under 1700 US. That's big, right? Yeah. That's high. So that, you know, incorporating,
I suppose that's the ramp up, all-in sustaining cost for the ramp up.
Well, even in the first, you know, even in the first year, the Greenstone all-in sustaining costs were substantially lower than the other assets.
Yeah.
And that number that I quote there is pre going 100% ownership of Greenstone, so you'd expect that to come down a little bit more. Again, once you, you know, average out the, you know, incorporating 100% ownership of a lower cost mine. But, you know, the old John McDonald rule, adding 30 to 50% on top of your all-in sustaining cost to get you to a corporate all-in cost, there's not much profit left on top of that. So,
yeah, right.
So, I mean, they're trading at 0.7 times NAV at the moment using consensus broken NAV. And you'd think they need to just operate consistently, start producing cash, pay down that debt for there to be a bit more appreciation in their share price.
Yeah, very good, JD, mate. Let's get into the weekend. Yeah, good public holiday, then straight into the weekend.
I don't mind it, mate. Pretty good. Can't complain.
Too easy. Stay safe out there as well. Miners.
Absolutely.
We're all thinking obvious. Now, thank you to who do we have in the show, JD? Seamus Murphy sorting MRFs out for the mining industry. Also anytime got, exploration.
We also got James at WA Water Balls.
Soon to be global South American Water Balls, probably. Mate, we're also got our great mates at Verify, Get Wet Solutions, DSI Underground, Silverstone, Brooks Airways and K-Drill. Email in the show notes. Get in touch with them all. Love your work. Cheers, money miners.
Hooteroo.
Hooteroo. Trav will be back next week too.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation and needs.